is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show, The Wake Up Call. I'm Dick Paddock, co-host, along with Emily doing our camera work and Lori being the other co-host. And we have a couple of guests, but we need to kind of get things squared away, so we'll put you back on listening to some interesting music. Kumbayasa! This is WCOM LP Chapel Hill in Carrboro. African Chocolate and bring up Lori Hoyt, co-host of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom Hour.
Thank you, Dick. And that was Dick Paddock, and we're here. Thank you for that interesting music, Dick. What was it?
It's called, it's an album called African Chocolate, and I'll be darned if I can pronounce the name. I'll give it a shot. Onye Onemachi.
Okay, that's good. Thank you. Sometimes it takes us a little while to get set up in here, so we always have some good music to keep you happy while we're getting ready to for the main part of our show.
Oh, it also keeps the FCC happy.
And to keep the ACC happy, too. Our show today is going to be on something we've talked about before, but not for quite a while, and that is the TPP, which is the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement. Do I have that right? And we have two guests today who've been working really hard on this, Laura Parsons and Harry Phillips. And so we're going to be talking about that and bringing us up to date, because there's always things happening. I think things are going to be up before Congress, and anyhow, we'll talk about all of that, and we'll start off by just even talking for anybody who's hasn't listened to our previous shows or have missed other programs about this, just what is the TPP?
Okay, glad to take that, Lori.
And that's Harry Phillips. Thank you, Harry.
Yeah, this is Harry, and first, of course, thanks to Lori and Dick for this excellent program for some 7 years now, and you guys, you know, are models in the community for responsible social activism, and we all look to you for information and guidance, and you know, as we move through our various advocacy positions on different issues in the community. So thanks, Laurie and Dick. Thank you. Thank you very much. So what is the TPP? Well, the Trans-Pacific Partnership is a trade agreement among some 12 countries, including the United States. These countries make up some 40% of the world's GDP. And while it is out there in the public now, it has been largely negotiated over the last 10 years in secrecy, drafted by some 600 trade representatives from each of the 12 countries involved. So you and I have not had a chance to put our two cents in. But while there are 12 countries involved, the agreement, more accurately, is between multinational corporations that happen to reside in these 12 countries. There are dangers involved with the TPP. We likely, as with NAFTA and GATT and the WTO trade agreements, we are likely to have many of our existing jobs in the United States offshored, and that has been a tremendous problem. In fact, Professor Don Nonini, a professor of anthropology here at UNC Chapel Hill, has just completed a groundbreaking study in which he has traced, in specific terms, job loss in Congressional District 1, which is Representative G.K. Butterfield's district that begins in Wake County and stretches east and covers some 24 counties in North Carolina. And anyway, what Don has come up with is that some 41,000 jobs have been, manufacturing jobs, have been lost to North Carolina workers in that district alone since NAFTA's inception in 1994. So factory shutdowns and folks just have to sort of pull up stakes and start over. And this affects families, it affects communities, it affects local economies, you know, and generally disrupts life in District 1 for the benefit of multinational corporations like Procter Silex, for example, who choose to relocate to other areas of our country or to other countries, of course, because their potential profit returns will be greater. And so that occurs at the expense of North Carolina District 1 workers. But there are other dangers associated with this treaty. You know, climate change for many is the issue. It's the most important signature issue of our era. And disturbingly, the term climate change does not appear a single time in that 6,000-page document with some 30 chapters, not a single time. So, you know, that omission alone.
6,000 pages.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So that omission alone should raise red flags. There are also concerns regarding health care. In the chapter on intellectual property that covers patents, pharmaceutical companies want more and more extensive control over a patent for a particular drug, and so they have introduced into the document the phenomenon of evergreening. And evergreening refers to a company that has developed a particular drug for high blood pressure or lung disease or pancreatic cancer or whatever. The opportunity to come in and tweak very slightly that drug and thus to begin again the patent cycle, that, mm-hmm. which extends their control, which makes the production of generic drugs more difficult, mm-hmm. which keeps prices high, which militates against everyday people who suffer mm-hmm. from some of those conditions.
And there's been a lot of problems with and complaints about pharmaceuticals getting so high now before mm-hmm. TPP, because we have these other trade agreements that, like you said, have already caused so many problems with labor, with the environment, and this is like the granddaddy of all of them. This is 12 countries. NAFTA was what Canada and Mexico, the North American trade agreement.
Yeah.
And we had CAFTA, which I'm not sure if that did that pass or not. That did? I think it did. So here we are with this huge 12 countries, 40% of the world's trade
GDP.
Right. And we're already having trouble. So this is really, really, really scary.
It is scary indeed, Lori. And let me say at the very beginning that I think that there's nothing inherently wrong with a trade treaty.
Mm-hmm.
It all depends on how it's set up. This is not a fair trade treaty. A fair trade treaty would look out for working people. It would look out for the planet. It would attend to matters of food security and the right to the essentials of life, clean air, clean water, clean energy production, the opportunity for good jobs, the opportunity to pursue your education. But this treaty does not do that.
I just wanted to say that one of the clues as to what's not good about this is that it's not a treaty. It's an agreement.
Right.
And as a result, that means that it's capable of being put through without the requirements that go along with the treaty. And there's also the fast track gimmick that they use to further weaken any oversight, because it's a yes or no, up or down vote. And so the fact that they basically have tried another trick to get it passed so that there will be less of a chance that we can do something about it, it's very significant to me. You don't even have to know the contents of it if you understand the chicanery that they're going through to get it passed.
Hi, yes, thank you. Thank you for having us here and talking about this extremely important issue that we do hope more people learn about and find out ways that they can be active if they do find it as concerning as we do. I'm going to start with, so not everybody knows about NAFTA, but people are starting to recognize it. And as a student at UNC, students are actually learning about NAFTA, studying the effects of NAFTA, seeing what it has done to people in this country and also what it has done to people in Mexico, and the devastating effect that this past trade deal has had, and CAFTA. So this trade deal, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, is called by those who have studied it NAFTA on steroids. And so it's so important to drive that in, that and we're still analyzing and learning about it because it's only been available for, 2 months? The whole text, Terry? Something like that.
About 2 months, right.
6,000 pages, yeah. So just to say that, and then also what you were saying just a moment ago, the trade deal itself with Fast Track and the way that it's written is that Fast Track allowed a lot of leniency. So what can happen is that if there is a yes vote in Congress, which we'll go into the dynamics of that in a little bit, other countries can actually jump in and piggyback on this deal. So, and I don't think it takes anything from the United States in order for that to happen. So you can have more countries and more of the world's economy come in on this. That is one pretty crucial aspect about that I read about recently, that it doesn't require much oversight from the United States. Once the trade deal goes through, other countries can just, and those countries may have serious labor concerns, serious human rights concerns, regarding et cetera.
Environmental concerns.
Right.
Certainly environmental concerns, yeah. We do have a little bit of new information about the TPP. You know, everything is timing here. And concerning the timeline, we are now in a 60-day public scrutiny period in which the public has access to this document. So any of our listeners, Lori and Dick, can go online to any number of places and find the document, and you can begin pouring through that legal language, which is very difficult to work through. It's dense. It's, in many cases, vague. Many of us are not easy with it. But that is available online. We do have the date of February 4th that was made available to us actually last week by Renee Mass, regional organizer of Food and Water Watch, who informed our statewide TPP coalition at a meeting last week that President Obama will sign the treaty, will sign the agreement on February 4th in New Zealand. So our general sense is that representatives, leaders from the 12 countries will convene in New Zealand and sign the agreement then. However, the voting period, it is a 90-day voting period, I believe, either 60 or 90 days, but that begins only after the bill is introduced into our Congress. And so that
so they can decide when they're going to when they're going to introduce it.
Correct.
In other words, the 90 days hasn't started. We'll wait till the bill gets introduced.
It could be introduced, Lori, on February 5th, the day after the president—not this president, but the president—signs it, or it could wait several months, or because it's an election year, people who control those sorts of things could decide to make it not an election issue and not get after it until 2017 sometime. So we don't know when at this point.
Yeah, but the 90-day period is the maximum. They can cut it off any more earlier if they want to.
They could vote on the first or second day, or they could vote on the 89th or 90th day, right?
Oh, they don't have to have 90 days for people to make their input?
So this is an actually interesting part of the, I guess, the whole legacy of secrecy involved with TPP.
Yeah.
So when it was released, we were talking about that like around 2 months ago, the full text, you know, because before it was, you know, it was being negotiated. And, you know, this is where senators and representatives couldn't even have aides come with them and copy the text. They couldn't even take photos of this text. Even Senator Elizabeth Warren was saying this thing is so extremely difficult to read entirely legalese, just to go over the secrecy aspect. So once the text was released, the public comment period then was open, during the holidays, right, Harry? And it closed on December 28th. So there you go, you know. So it's a sort of like Friday news dump, end of the year dump. And but there's still, as Renee Moss has said, forgive me if those dates aren't exactly spot on, but it captures the general period. But Renee Moss was saying, you know, public comment is important, but really what's important and what we'll get into talking about is contacting your legislators, your senators and your representatives, because that's who's going to be voting on it. You know, and that's who has the control right now.
Yeah, but I'm really struck what you started off, Harry, saying how it's been 10 years in the making, and you said it's really not so much between nations as between multinational corporations. So they have made input into it. They have been informed every step of the way. Mm-hmm. They are the ones who've had their lawyers working on it. So there's 6,000 pages that, you know, that's what lawyers love, fine combing. And what do they say? The devil is in the details.
Right.
So even our senators or representatives, you just have to wonder how much grasp there, you know, because there's other things going on besides the TPP that they're working on, not to even speak about elections coming up. And so it's just the whole thing kind of takes your breath away in terms of if we're still pretending to call ourselves a democracy, how much information we get and how much input we get. So this is just, I just had a comment on that because it's so upsetting.
Well, I'm glad you did, Lori. I want to make my first promotional comment, and I'll probably do it three or four times, and Laura may do it a time or two. about a teach-in. In case listeners want to learn more about the TPP, our group, the Triangle Area TPP Working Group, and Student Action with Workers, a UNC student group of which Laura is a member, are sponsoring together a teach-in in the TPP next Tuesday, February 2nd, on the UNC campus from 6 to 8 at the Sonia Haynes Stone Center on the UNC campus, right next to the Genome Building near the bell tower. And it's free. It's from 6 to 8, and we will have four experts, four wonderful speakers. Laura will be one. She will speak about intellectual property and its impact on students. Renee Moss, regional organizer for Food and Water Watch, will speak about the impacts of the TPP on the environment. Don Nonini, who I mentioned a minute ago, will
and he was with you on our show previously.
He was.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Don will talk about the legal apparatus that is the glue that holds this agreement together. He will speak about ISDS, which I'll talk about in just a minute. That is investor-state dispute settlement. And our final speaker will be Robert Koraher. Robert is an organizer with North Carolina AFL-CIO, and he will talk very specifically about the impact the agreement will have on North Carolina workers, especially in the manufacturing sector. So we have been working hard on that teach-in, and, you know, with Laura's help especially, we are poised at this point. So we invite the public to come out. There'll be plenty of snacks at the beginning and a wonderful venue in the Hitchcock Room at the Stone Center on the UNC campus. So I hope folks will come out and partake, and much of the program will be turned over to question answer. So
and an important part of that, since parking on campus is such a problem, the Stone Center, the driveway right to the left of it, you go down and there is a parking deck, and it's free after hours. So I think there'll be free parking, and it should be plenty of it, because at 6 o'clock the workers for the day will have gone home. So that's an important inducement in the winter weather to have a place to park.
Yes, we definitely love to have students, staff at UNC, community members, professors. Again, this is something that's just it's been under the radar with mainstream media. But luckily for those who are interested in learning more about this, there are some good resources that might as well. I was going to give it to you sometime in the program. I learned a lot about the TPP through Democracy Now! In segments with Lori Wallach. So you can look that up on YouTube to do, sort of background primer. Also, publiccitizen.org is an excellent resource, as well as the Electronic Frontier Foundation, which does a lot, especially on how the Internet will be affected, copyright, there are issues of data security, as far as data sharing with companies, a lot going on in this trade deal. So I hope to see you all there. And, we'll have snacks and speakers, and you can ask questions, et cetera.
Good. In addition to the good websites, online resources that Laura just mentioned, a couple of others that are terrific are one is Flush the TPP, and another is Expose the TPP. And you can simply Google those, and they'll take you right to those sites. And very, very solid information. a minute ago, we mentioned the legal apparatus that will hold this agreement together. And so I just want to say a few words about what that thing is, and it is called ISDS, the Investor-State Dispute Settlement. Investor, that is the multinational corporations, hyphen, state, local governments, that is, dispute settlement. So this is a court. It is a tribunal system that has the ability to override existing law in any of the 12 countries that have signed on to the agreement. This is all possible if our Congress votes yes, gives it an up vote. It doesn't have to be that way, and that's why it's so terribly important now to make contact with our district representatives and state senators, you know, and there are many ways to do that. A number of groups have been meeting regularly with David Price, for example, here in District 4. Other folks have been meeting regularly with Representative Butterfield in District 1. A number of folks, including Laura and myself, have been part of delegations meeting with Representative Mark Walker at his Graham office. Representative Alma Adams is another one who is open to meeting with folks concerned about the TPP. Renee Elmers is another who we might visit. But certainly, for the benefit of listeners here, you do not need to feel that you need to go in person to speak with the representative or his or her staff. You can make a phone call or you can send an email message. And you don't need to have any personal face-to-face contact, which can be uncomfortable for some folks. And if you don't want to speak to a staff, then you can call after hours, you know, after 5 o'clock Monday through Friday or on the weekends, and simply leave a message. And by law, staff are required to note the nature of the call and points of view expressed and convey that information to the representative. So that's an easy, no-pressure way to do what we need to do, which is pressure our representatives, the decision-makers who will vote on the treaty, to vote against it. But anyway, to get back to the ISDS for a minute, these arbitration tribunals will be staffed by three judges, each of which represent corporations and will be appointed by either the World Bank or the United Nations, and not by our Congress or by any other country's Congress. Of course, they have a vested interest in promoting conflict and disputes between corporations and governments and between governments. Why do TPP representatives have a vested interest in promoting conflict? Because multinational corporations can afford to sue local governments. So, example, BP recently sued a Canadian province. I can't remember. Was it Alberta? It's whatever the province that the Keystone Pipeline begins in.
It's Alberta.
Alberta. Thank you, Dick. For an exorbitant amount of money, and that is being received as a threat. I mean, I think it's $25 million is the figure I heard. So does the province of Alberta want to fight a multinational corporation that has extensive financial resources, you know, with the possibility of losing? And so that's a big deal. So the ISDS is rigged, I would say, you know, from the beginning, from the way it's conceived and put into practice. It can also decide on massive fines against governments when corporations file arbitration lawsuits against them for violating their expected or anticipated profits. So a multinational corporation can argue that it's expected, its potential profits will be jeopardized by existing sovereign or national law, and it can sue on those grounds. So another fact that indicates that that ISDS is rigged and works against local government. So big picture here in terms of our conceptions of justice these days is that sovereign law, that is law that we all agree upon and abide by in our countries, maybe not agree with, but certainly abide by in our different countries, can be overridden by ISDS, by these multinational corporations. They have big money. They can sue. Municipal governments in this age of austerity cannot compete on that level. And so another way in which it's rigged in favor of these corporations. So these laws cover American labor, environmental, health, public policy, and legal rights laws. Additionally, once a finding has been handed down, there is no recourse for appeal.
Yes, definitely. Thank you. Thank you, Harry. This is, it's, so when we're listening to this, you know, and I mean, it's still hard for me to process, and I've been reading about it and following it for quite a while, but I definitely encourage listeners to read up on this trade deal, you know, to look at the sources, because especially, I mean, there are so many other elements to this, but ISDS, Investor Settlement Dispute, ISDS, is something that is extremely concerning, and I would encourage people to look up Senator Warren's response to ISDS. She has like a 10-point. She has actually a lot of presentations about it, but I just wanted to give another example that's even more sort of driving home, and it couldn't have happened at a stranger time, really, as far as the TPP. as we know and as we're thankful, President Obama issued, I guess, by executive order or through his governmental apparatus, that the Keystone Pipeline would not resume, that we would not be, you know, having the Keystone Pipeline in our country. And now TransCanada is suing the United States for $15 billion because of this project. And this is through the ISDS, through NAFTA. And here's a curious thing, too, and I would definitely, this was Laura Wallach, Democracy Now! Again, when this came out, I think earlier in January, late December. So the prospective cost of the pipeline was like $2 or $3 billion, but they're suing for $15. That's because businesses can sue for projected profits. So this is really becoming an issue. I mean, like, so Obama is our president-elect, right? The people have elected him, and, you know, the president-elect of the people has, just, you know, through his powers in our government, decided not to go through the Keystone. But there's TransCanada is now, you know, sort of like trumping this democratically appointed person and decision. So this is something that's coming up right in front of us, and I think it's just a
what
symptom.
Great timing.
Oh, I know, right? It's, well, if anything, this is an excellent example to give people, and the,
yes,
you know, the exorbitant amount of money after for profits. And it's a symptom of, I think, just an increasingly monetized world. But we can do something about it, and, you know, don't be overwhelmed. We'll get something done about it.
Thank you, Laura. We're going to take a station break right now. When Dick gives that signal, it means that's up to when we do a station break. Oh. And so people can catch their breaths.
Sorry.
And think about what you still want to touch on. And Dick is going to do our station break. Thank you,
okay.
Dick.
Yes, this is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show, so the wake-up call. And you're listening to us over WCOM, LP, Chapel Hill, and Carrboro. You may also be listening to us over the Internet by going to WCOMFM.org, which is the radio station's website, and you can connect up there and listen to us live if you are out of range of our screamingly hot 100-watt station. We are...
Do not fear. You can still get us.
Right. This is Laura Parsons and Harry Phillips. Members, are you officially part of the TPP working group?
Yeah, no, they both are.
And that's those are our guests, and we're talking obviously about TPP, that Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Yes.
Right.
And I also, we keep forgetting to mention this, that we are now also on TV. We are on the People's Channel, and we have an ad right before and after Amy Goodman. We got a gorgeous ad about the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. It's just beautiful. But we still have been trying to get back with them to say, also for your sake, mention that we're on your channel. And we're on a few different times, but the only consistent time is 10 o'clock on Thursday evening. So 10 o'clock on Thursday evening, you know, in Chapel Hill, it's Channel 8. In Carborough, it's Channel 4 or 6. In Durham, it's got it. But the People's Channel, look up where it is in your area. It's the Community Channel. And we are now on it. That's why Amy O'Hare is right here videoing this show. And within a few weeks, we hope it'll be on TV.
Yeah. Well, we need to decide.
We're becoming a multimedia group here, Dick.
Right. Definitely.
Yeah.
And we are, as I said, on WCOM LP.
We're... Yes.
103.5.
This is your community radio station, and it is wonderful what it offers to the community. So many interesting, provocative, variety of programs all throughout the day. And on Saturday morning, great music.
Right.
Great music other times, but I particularly listen on Saturday mornings. And so Laura and Harry, we've been talking about, which is, I think, one of the most upsetting things, is the...
I hadn't mentioned our underwriter yet.
Oh, we're still doing the station break. Sorry about that.
Yes. Station break.
And they've also been with us for 7 years,
right,
or 8 years,
yes,
whatever it is.
The Internationalist Bookstore. At 101 Lloyd Street, right here in beautiful downtown Carborough, is our sole and very, I hope, pleased underwriter.
Mm-hmm.
And we do appreciate their support.
Yes, we do.
Okay,
so what we've been talking about is the Trans-Pacific Partnership so-called trade agreement, although it's much, much more than that. And we've been talking about how the media is really not doing a very good job of educating the public about it, and it takes groups like yours all over the country trying to educate people in their area about it, because it's a pretty complicated thing. But one of the most troublesome, as you were saying, worrisome, concerning things is that it can abrogate our sovereignty. We can have environmental laws, we can have decisions made at the highest level by our president, and if some corporation doesn't like it, they can kind of sue. Now, hopefully, the U.S. government has enough money to fight the corporation, although when they're trying to get $15 billion, that's takes your breath away. But if they wanted to sue Chapel Hill, because we are pretty progressive, and maybe we'll have something about a fair wage at $15 an hour, they can sue, whether it's a smaller municipal government, whether it's a state, like California was sued by a Canadian company for an additive in the gasoline. They sold the additive. Yeah, you probably remember that. And California decided it was cancer-producing for its citizens. They got sued for, and they sued not just for a smaller amount of money, for all the anticipated profits that they'll be losing. So I want to go back to Laura and Harry, and I just had to put my 2 cents worth in, because that's so concerning, their ability to do that.
Yeah, I think... I was watching a special on that the other day, and the compound ended up being dangerous, and like California was vindicated, but they still lost all this money through, and whose money is it? It's taxpayer money. So I think we're looking at, you know, a sort of a phenomenon we're seeing a lot of around here, perhaps even locally, university systems, but it's a transfer.
Do you remember the slap suit that they used to throw at various and sundry environmental groups and whatever. I've forgotten what it's SLAPP, and it was a suit that had nothing in its design except to keep things tied up in court and drain the resources of the environmental group or whatever group it was. And it sounds to me like that's what's going on.
Right.
It's, you know, it's part of the background to what they're doing with the suits that they're putting into the tribunals. That's my thought.
Definitely so. I mean, yeah, the problem is the tribunal. It's not democratic. Or there's, but there's no democratic accountability. That's the word, you know. So this is, you know, financial and corporate. And I think it's, you know, I think ultimately people, there's nothing wrong with trading with other countries as long as it's fair and just, and a lot of people don't suffer for what was recently discussed on NPR on the fiscal program was the TPP all in end, it's a projection, of course, but would bring 0.5% of growth to the U.S. economy. But on the other side, I also encourage listeners to read, or if they have time, but there's also something very informative called the Labor Advisory Committee report, where it was heads of labor in the United States. There were just about 18 heads of labor on the report, and they're supposed to be through the whole process of the TPP, but only marginally involved, unfortunately. And so as a part of the process, they write a report about it, and so I would encourage people to read it. But there is a formula in there that Paul Krugman, the economist, stands by, where it's projected that 70% of working class unskilled laborers' wages would go down because of this deal. So at what cost, you know, does our economy grow at 0.05%? Harry, do you want to say anything, or you want me to go into students?
Well, just one area, if I can just bring this in for a minute, that ISDS might have great impact, and something that we're all sensitive to in our country is the environment. You know, the TPP is full of polluter-friendly language, what I call it anyway. Removed from that Chapter 5 on the environment in the TPP document, what were many shalls, that is, enforceable regulations regarding the environment, and replaced with many shoulds, so that language like sovereign nations are obligated to abide by their current environmental standards, but there's no enforcement there. You know, they don't have to. You know, so how would that look in real terms? So in the eastern part of our state, where many of our southeastern pine forests are being used to supply wood pellets to eastern and western European countries, you know, how would that look if the corporation overseeing that project wanted to expand? And could it successfully challenge existing North Carolina and federal laws with regard to you know, getting access to more of our native forests, you know, and who would win that battle in court, you know, and would that battle be expedited so as not to get in the way of potential profits? You know, that's something that we might be thinking about. Another area under environment is fishing. You know, so many of our waters have been overfished, you know, and when countries are obliged but not required to abide by international rules on overfishing, you know, that would work in the favor of corporations. What about our being tethered for so many generations to extractivist policies regarding energy sources in this country, coal, oil, natural gas? Our infrastructure is set up for that. Many critics of the TPP think that while coal consumption may decrease in this country, extraction will not. It will simply be offshored. It will simply be exported. And as I mentioned before, there's no mention of climate change. Mm-hmm. You know, so that means what? That climate issues can largely be ignored or not responded to. Mm-hmm. The problem of poaching, the illegal taking of endangered plants and animals on those countries, presumably will be permitted, or at least not monitored as strongly as they need to be. So these are some of the problems in the domain of the environment that mm-hmm. ISDS would not help us with.
Mm-hmm. So. And we, there's a lot we don't know because it's been shrouded in such secrecy, but we have the terrible example of the previous trade agreements with NAFTA. We talked about 41,000 jobs that Don Nannini researched. NAFTA's where we lost so many of them. And that's where people wonder why all of a sudden we're having so many immigrants come from Mexico. It's because we dumped cheap corn mm-hmm. on them that we subsidized through our government and destroyed their corn farmers. And so thousands of them were going to be starving and headed on down to the States. So this is unexpected consequences, unplanned for consequences, just like the Iraq War. Oh, let's go do this. And then there's these consequences that are terrible for us and for our country. So and this is so mammoth, it's hard to even wrap around, and nobody can really say the far-reaching consequences that are going to be occurring from this. Nice. But Harry Phillips and Laura Parsons are here, who have been studying it and are trying to point out some of the pitfalls and possible repercussions that it would be great to avoid if we can convince our congressmen to vote down on that. So
yeah, Lori, I think you've made the important point here is that as heinous and draconian as the TPP seems to be, this is a winnable fight for everyday people, and
very
it's all
so.
A matter of influencing, of pressuring our decision makers. That is, the people, our U.S. senators and our district representatives, to vote no on the TPP. And as we mentioned a few minutes ago, you don't have to show up in person. You simply can make a phone call or send an email message, or you can send a message via snail mail. And
that's always good.
And district representatives and senators' staffs are required to record that information and your point mm-hmm. of view and convey it, make it part of the public record, convey it to the politician. And
we around here, we're all pretty good about getting up. David Price, I'm sure, has heard from many of us many times. But there are representatives and congressmen in other parts of the state. So if you know somebody or have a good friend or a relative who's in a part of the state that, may not be as politically active as we are in the Triangle or the Triad, get in touch with them, inform them. And again, one of the best sites that I've heard of is Public Citizen. They have linked to Global Watch with Lori Wallach. That's where she mm-hmm. is on Public Citizen. It's really good. You mentioned some others. Harry? Flush the TPP and expose the TPP, other websites. So, but start spreading the word, because the media is not doing the kind of information stuff that they should be doing for the citizens.
And if folks want a very quick, less than 2-minute take on the TPP, they can go to YouTube and simply type in TPP overview or TPP mm-hmm. summary, and be put in touch with many dozens of fine, well-produced brief videos. There are some terrific ones under 2 minutes. Bill Moyers, if you'll type in
excellent.
Bill Moyers and TPP, he did mm-hmm. a program on the TPP where he had as his guests economists Eve Smith and Dean Baker, and they both broke it down into very easy to understand, viewer friendly terms, and so it's now it's pretty easy to understand the TPP now.
And tell us more about next Tuesday.
We just got a call from our friend of the program, Ed King. He wanted me to point out to you two things. One is that all three of the Democratic candidates are against the TPP.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, is Jill Stein, who's the candidate for president with the Green Party. And he also said that back in the day when they, in 1993, when NAFTA was up for consideration, he and Joe Straley apparently got in and talked to David Price for like an hour. And it didn't, you know, Joe Straley was real hard to resist, but he did not carry the day. David Price went ahead and supported it. And since then, I understand that he has not not so proud of having done that.
Well, it's interesting with David Price now, Dick. You know, I was part of one delegation and have spoken with other delegations who have visited Representative Price, and he seems to be on the fence, and he is not coming out against the TPP, so that's very disturbing. But you would think that he would, based on at least some of his voting record and his concern for working people, you know, and for students. But there's a, you know, a dynamic at play here, and it likely is in operation with Representative Butterfield as well. These two men feel strong loyalty to President Obama, and because Obama has come out in favor of the TPP, there may be a conflict there. You know, Representative Price would simply not argue against it, you know, and so my experience with him was less than satisfying. So.
Right.
If I may, just really quick, though, it was an interesting, you know, lead up to the whole, to the fast track, which was, you know, the up or down, or like, you know, letting the up or down vote go in for our listeners, which happened a few months earlier. So here, you know, there is, I think, you know, some promise at the end of this, because Fast Track only went through with, like, what, five votes? So I think, I mean, you know, it's a different scenario, but that's not a large margin. So, yes, if people are concerned and educate themselves, you know, certainly reach out to your congresspeople. Also, you know, come to our teach-in on Tuesday, you know, February 2nd, UNC at the Stone Center.
At 6 p.m.
to Abe. We'll have some refreshments there.
Yes.
And we'll have Q&A. We also do have a website for the teach-in, which is www.tppteachin, all one word, then a period, .web.unc.edu. But yes, please, you know, we hope to see you there, or, you know, reach out to the TPP working group or Food and Water Watch. Thanks for listening. Thanks for having us.
Yes, I'm glad that you could come. Go ahead.
Yeah. We're not through yet.
We
Harry. Could be, but we have more time. Harry wants to.
So, Laurie, if you'll indulge me just for just a second.
Sure.
So I want to try and make some connections here, which loyal supporter Miriam Thompson is always encouraging us to do, is to connect the dots, you know. So yesterday, maybe three dozen of us attended the UNC Board of Governors meeting at the Friday Center, and there were some arrests and there were some concerns. So, you know, there are connections between what occurred yesterday and the way the UNC Board of Governors is behaving now, and the TPP,
absolutely,
what we're talking about here. So, and the thread of commonality here, it's not a thread, it's a whole skein, you know, is the corporatization of our world. You know, students reacted aggressively, and I laud them for it yesterday when a committee reported at the Board of Governors meeting yesterday that they supported removing two degree programs at East Carolina University, one in art history, an undergraduate major in art history, and another that had something to do with public health. I could not get the title of the program. But they were upset. The rest of us were upset because, and especially with the hiring, not with the hiring really, but with the installation of new UNC system president Margaret Spellings, who has a strong record of being in the pocket of multinational corporations, that our university system is steadily being hijacked by corporate interests,
mm-hmm,
and by the interests of privatization. So, and that's really what the TPP is all about, is about setting things up so that corporate interests can privatize what should be public, mm-hmm. whether it's healthcare or education mm-hmm. or basic infrastructure like roads, mm-hmm. bridges, and water supplies. Mm-hmm. So this is the nature of our world today. Is that the corporate power is successful. I mean, it does have political influence now, and they're going after what they want, and at the expense of everyday people. So
yeah, and I think that's what, when you pay attention, that's what we're all reacting so strongly to. You know, that is already so much of that going on, and this is like a further consolidation of that kind of power and anti-democratic forces. I mean, our democracy right now, you can talk to anybody, and we're all realizing that the power of money in the elections has become, it's been a scandal, and it's becoming a worse scandal, to the fact that, I mean, you look at where people turn to outsider, like whether it's Trump, and I'm very much a Bernie person, but they are fed up with those who they see as the establishment because they feel so screwed. And, so there is so much in the way of anti-democratic forces in this country and the power of money and greed. And I think that this is just a further tightening of the screws, where even when we work so hard to get an environmental thing passed, or we work so hard to get the president to not allow the pipeline to go through, and then to see where it could all be undone like that, just like this legislature, talk about making connections. This one legislature gets in, and boy, it's like a tap turned on. They are undoing what decades of work for education, for making this state more progressive. It's being wiped out as we sit here. You know, it's just very frightening. And I want to thank both of you, Harry Phillips and Laura Parsons, for your work in educating yourself so you can educate us about a very complicated, in some ways you could say it boils down to some pretty basic facts, but it's very complicated, 6,000 pages. And that's why I think a lot of times people don't, and the newspapers, they could certainly do a lot better job of educating. It does not have to be that complicated to get the basic value points across, but they're not. And so thank you for doing this. Thank you for being on the program.
Thank you, Lori, very much.
We still have a couple, 3 minutes if you have some last things.
Yeah, tell them. Give one more pitch about next Tuesday.
Yeah.
They say you have to hear things 3 or 4 times for them to
stick. Well, thank you again for having us, and thank you to all the listeners. And so, yes, so those who have heard the program or think you might know people that would want to come to this program, it's a TPP teach-in sponsored by the TPP Working Group and UNC Student Action with Workers. And it'll be taking place next Tuesday, February 2nd, 6 to 8 p.m., at the Sonia Haynes Stone Center on the first floor, room 111, which is the Hitchcock Multipurpose Room. And it's just, we're going to have 4 speakers, Professor Don Nonini, Professor of Anthropology, speaking about ISDS, Robert Korher of the North Carolina AFL-CIO, Renee Moss of Food and Water Watch, and myself. And yes, we'd love to have you there, and there will be time for Q&As. And definitely, this is for all members of the community who are concerned, and students and staff, faculty, and just anyone who wants to come. We'd love to see you.
And free parking.
Yes. Free parking, yes.
Free parking and free refreshments.
Yes.
Free refreshments, free parking, and it's a great way to continue to educate yourself. We hope that this program has helped. We'll be having things on again. We still have this window of opportunity to make phone calls, write letters if you're a little nervous and not used to calling your representative. But this is a good time to practice. Right. You know, just say please don't vote against this. You don't have to go into the whole thing. Just say I'm really opposed to it, and I think it's going to be terrible for our country.
Give them your best Howard Beale imitation. I'm mad as hell, and I ain't going to take it anymore.
I found it quite empowering to start, reaching out to my congresspeople. I think it's an excellent thing.
Laura's just saying that it, once you do it, you really feel empowered that you're reaching out. You feel like you're really a citizen who's participating.